West Burkett.
It's here. Epic's Galentine's Party, Thursday, February 12th from 4:30 to 7:30. Pop-up vendors, yummy bites, drinks, and surprise goodies, and all new treasures we just unpacked. Get a sneak peek on Facebook, Epic Collection, spelled E-P-O-C-H. Rally the girl gang and don't miss it. Epic Collection on Main next to Bison Union. Thursday night, 4:30 to 7:30. See you there.
Are winter illnesses keeping you or your family from work, school, or play? When fever, cough, or body aches strike, don't wait it out. At Same Day Health and Imaging, we're here for you 7 days a week, offering quick, compassionate care. Illnesses don't follow a schedule, but our extended and weekend hours have you covered. Same Day Health and Imaging, located at 1470 Sugarland Drive between Walmart and WyoVision. Walk-ins welcome or schedule an appointment. Visit SheridanSameDay.org to learn more.
The following message is presented by Century 21 BHJ, 101 South Main.
At CHAPS Equine Assisted Services, volunteers help change lives and bring confidence, joy, and healing to people of all ages, alongside the healing power of horses. Whether you're experienced with horses or brand new to the barn, there's a place for you on our team. We're looking for caring hearts who want to make a difference right here in our community. No horse experience needed. Reach out to Lou, our volunteer coordinator, at volunteercoordinator@chapswyo.org.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Thursday, February 12th. From the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. And this morning, we're joined by Sheridan City Council Member Andrew Patzig and Utilities Director Dan Roberts. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Yeah, very nice to be here. Thank you.
How are things down at the city?
Things are good. We're humming along. Things are. We've got some business that we're taking care of, and frankly, it's just an honor to be part of leadership in such a great town. So,
and let's jump right into it. Let's talk about something that we hear a lot about. There are certain individuals within the community know a lot about this. There's others who don't know as much. So can you explain who makes up the SAWS Joint Powers Board and what their responsibilities are?
Oh, absolutely. So the SAWS Joint Powers Board is made up of 3 members from the county and 3 members from the city. And it is a governing board that handles the administration of the water distribution network that is outside of the city limits and not under the city jurisdiction. And I just make that distinction because there are some customers out in the county that are actually city customers. But it was really interesting the way it was designed. There were 3 people from each entity. Therefore, neither entity can steamroll the other because 4 votes are needed. So at least one consenting vote is needed from the other entity. So it's a really good balance of power between city and county interests.
And they handle water distribution. Where does the water initially come from? The city?
Yeah. I think there's some joint ownership on, Dan could probably speak more accurately to this, but the water treatment plants, there's some joint ownership on that. And it goes into the distribution system. The distribution system itself is effectively one distribution system. It provides...
Interconnected.
Yeah, it's interconnected.
Completely, holistically, yeah.
So, I mean, the water will flow out of the city into the SAWS, back into the city, back out into the SAWS. It's one interconnected network.
Okay. And now, can you explain why the city and the SAWS JPB are pursuing a level 2 study of Lake DeSmit as a potential long-term water supply?
So I'll add a little bit to the what SAWS Joint Powers Board is we mentioned it's an interconnected system. The city also operates and maintains the entire system. So and SAWS essentially contracts with us for operation and maintenance services. So we bill them for costs associated with that for O&M share in operating the system and work that is done out in the SAWS on distribution system. So SAWS is the governance over the ownership of an administration of the SAWS portion of the water system. From a planning perspective, we have one water service boundary, which is essentially, we look at it as this one system is designed and intended to support future growth within this boundary around SAWS and not just the city. City is encompassed within that as well. So from a planning perspective, we plan to that growth within that boundary. And what are our future needs from a water supply perspective to meet the growth demands within there? So that's one of the primary reasons why the city and SAWS are generally looked at here locally, but even at the state level as kind of one entity, because we're really supporting one water system. So that really is a good reason why we're doing a joint application for this level two studies, because we have the same interests. We are one system, and so the two governing bodies, and it's looked upon by the state as a unified request as well. And so that's what they want to see. And really, that's the primary reason.
Now, what does a Level 2 Wyoming Water Development Commission study actually evaluate for a project?
In simple terms, without getting too technical, it's really taking a specific project that is derived out of a master plan, which all master plans from the water for water systems generally throughout Wyoming, but ours specifically, they're funded by the Wyoming Water Development Commission. So it's called a planning study. You develop a master plan for your water system. In that, future water supplies are identified to meet growth demands out into the future. So where are those sources gonna be? So we'll call those projects, and they get prioritized as well based on factors that you determine in the master plan. So those planning studies are funded 100% by Water Development Commission. And so you have a planning study, a master plan. You say, okay, we want to implement the priority one project of a master plan. In our case, we have a 2019 master plan that identified Lake Des Smet as our potential long-term water supply source for our water system. So again, that includes the city and SAWS encompassing water system. And so that's our number one recommended source that we should look at for our long-term water supply. And we're talking 50, 100-year plus supply. But developing water, obtaining water for a community can take a very long time. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's a very finite source. So planning for those things and trying to pursue those things well in advance is definitely very prudent, and that's really why we're approaching this now, is to get ahead of it and answer the questions. So a level two study is taking that recommendation of Lake Des Smet and it looks at that viability of that project in much more detail. Is that possible? And what would that look like? And what are all the factors associated with it? Availability of the water itself, the technical merits of it. Can it feasibly be done from a technical perspective? What are the costs associated with it? Because that's an important cost. If you develop something that nobody can afford to operate or maintain and pay for in the future, not alone just its initial cost, but to maintain it in the future, then it's not a really viable solution. And so all those factors get rolled up into really affirming a project that can go to a construction level implementation. And that's really what your goal is for a for a level two study is to arrive at something that is a project level that can go on to the next phase of a water development project, and that's called a level three construction request. Now, at that stage, you're no longer getting 100% funding support from water development. You're actually getting a 50% support. So they would pay 50% of a level three construction project, and then the sponsor, if that were to be the city and SAWS in this case, or there may be other sponsors involved that have construction projects that they would be, connected to this, would request funding as well. But you have 50% match is what you have to come up with. So
when it comes to the city and SAWS right now, what is our primary water source? Is it a watershed up there?
So it's the Big Goose watershed. And so our primary source is Big Goose itself. And that's, it's diverted up at the base of the Big Goose Canyon. So that's our primary water source. But during irrigation season, that water right holders start to get called out of priority as flows diminish. And so higher priority, more senior priority water right holders get to use their water. And so the more junior right holders get to no longer use their water.
Yeah, and so, first in time, first in right.
So in the middle of summer, you know, you have that start to happen. And actually it happens somewhere around July of every year.
Wow. On the rodeo.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but what you can do and what we do as a city is you can supplement the flows in the creek so that you're not called out of priority from a more senior right holder. So that's why we use stored water in our reservoirs. So Twin Lakes is owned by the city. And then city and SAWS have water rights in Park Reservoir, which we can release as well. And we use those and release them at requested rates to supplement creek flows so that we don't get called out of priority and we can use our allotted amounts. So that's generally how that process works. But the Big Goose watershed is the source of all of our water right now. And so this Lake Des Smedes is an entirely different watershed, of course. And it's actually a different basin altogether. Yeah,
different river system.
Wow.
Yeah,
you'd have to pump the water up and over into the Tongue River Basin.
I was just going to ask, isn't that a lower elevation?
Well, it's there is definitely pumping that would be needed to get it up regardless of what the elevation is relative to Sheridan. You'd have to get it up into the Tongue River Basin so that it can flow down the creeks. And then there's the question of whether or not it would be treated close to Lake Des Smedes and send a pipeline down the valley with treated water, or if it would be raw water and then have another treatment plant that's closer to town. And obviously one of the things that the study is going to look at is when it's talking about its cost estimates is, well, what if we put the treatment plant close to to Lake Des Smedes, and then we could send treated water down, and then we could branch off, and it would turn into kind of a regional system, which Dan alluded to is the desire of the WWDC. They don't want to fund a project for Sheridan and then a project for Claremont and then a project for Buffalo. If they're going to pool their money in, let's get one system that can feed a lot of people. It makes it more efficient, and then they can pool their efforts into making a bigger impact in Wyoming, essentially.
And level two, where we're at right now, or what we're about to start, we'll take a look at the cost effectiveness and efficiency of that system.
Yes, and that's going to be one of the parts is the cost estimate coming out of this because, you know, with anything, any project that's this size, we've got a lot of variables in play. And anytime there's a lot of variables, also some controversy. And one of the biggest controversies with large projects is, well, where's the money going to come from? And given the fact that a phase three project is only 50% covered, then, there would have to be a need for that, a public match to cover the 50% of that. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I want to just kind of bring for perspective, in Sheridan County, the majority of the water usage is actually agricultural, and it's not domestic or water, you know, water consumption or domestic use. And so one of the options that Sheridan has and has been trying to exercise, well, if we can get more shares up in our watershed, up in our reservoirs, like Park Reservoir, then we can just send the water down to our current treatment plants. We don't have to build a new treatment plant, and we can handle our needs, our future needs that way. But the problem with that is that sometimes you put out an initiative like that, people find out and they start thinking, maybe I don't want to sell my water, and maybe, you know, I'm going to hold on to it. And because of that, there was only a limited amount of water that we ended up being able to purchase for the sake of treatment. And it kind of left us with looking for other options, other supplementary water options.
And that's where Lake DeSchmidt was thrown out there as a feasibility.
Yeah. And it's a significant water source. I mean, it's 240 acre feet. So to put into perspective, that's 40 times bigger than Twin Lakes. So
for folks who might not know, what's the relationship between Sheridan and Johnson counties when it comes to Lake DeSchmidt? Because there is like a shared percentage, correct? Am I wrong on that?
Johnson County is essentially the owner of the majority holder and they operate Lake DeSchmidt. So they're the most significant owner in Lake DeSchmidt. The state of Wyoming has water rights in Lake DeSchmidt, as does Sheridan County.
Okay. So it is all kind of divided, but Johnson County has the majority.
Yeah, and they're essentially the operator of it, and that's an important distinction. One thing I wanted to point out, although the city and SAWS are sponsoring this level two study, there's other interests, and we'll call them stakeholders, and we're all part of a stakeholder group. There's others with interests in Lake DeSchmidt water, and so as we go through this level two study, those interests are going to also be considered.
Okay.
So Councilman Patzick mentioned, you know, other projects that might spin off from that. Well, it's going to consider Claremont because they're one of them, and potentially through Sheridan County's participation, maybe the communities of Story and or Banner and somewhere along the way, because they have some interest in Lake DeSchmidt. And so we have a list of stakeholders that have been identified. They're also going to be considered when we go through this process of evaluating it.
Dan, when is this going to start?
Well, so City Council is going to consider a resolution to submit the application. SAWS has already passed one on Monday night. So if council authorizes the city to submit the application, we'll do that by March 1st. I think consideration of the level two study by Water Development Commission and Select Water Committee, I believe it would occur in May, and maybe we would be kicking off in, you know, the first of the fiscal year around July. Okay. Possibly.
So Councilman, essentially SAWS sees the issue, and mm-hmm. they're like, you know what, let's consider Lake DeSchmidt, and then mm-hmm. they vote on that. That now goes to the city council.
Yeah. Each entity has to, and the county commissioners are going to have to weigh in on it too. So the SAWS Joint Powers Board does, and both governing bodies are going to have to approve submitting this, because it's going to be a co application for it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I just wanted to say about this is there's a lot of controversy in this, because we have a lot of money that's at stake. The people, there's a lot of fiscal conservatives. They're like, well, should we be doing this? I just wanted to put this out, regardless of whether or not we actually choose to try to fund something like this in the future. Studying this information is exactly what the city is supposed to be doing. It's the city's job to find out information. It's Dan's job to look forward into the future, see what problems are coming down the pike, and try to figure out what we can do about them now. So this is exactly what we should be doing. When the information is in our hands and we see the cost estimates and what it's actually going to mean for our communities, that's when we're going to have a harder decision to make. That's when we'll be at the fork in the road, and we need to figure out what we're going to what we're going to do. But right now, I don't see controversy in doing the study and expending the money to do the study because it's really necessary.
And we don't want to get caught with our pants down standing out there with a little water.
And like Dan was saying, I mean, this kind of thing takes decades to bring into fruition. So this is exactly the right time. We have more than enough water supply to get us well into the future. Right now is the time to be looking about what are we going to have to do after we reach that point, and all of a sudden we're running short. So
yeah, and Buffalo actually just got done with their big wells project, and that's been going on for close to maybe even more than a decade. I don't know when the studies began, but I was present when the drill hit the ground for the first time, and I do believe that was somewhere around 2017 under Les Hook. He started to explore those options, and they just got that tied up. The reason they did that was to make sure that if anything happened up in the Tyhack area, they still had reliable water for their community. On that, I got to take a quick commercial break. More with the city of Sheridan when we come back. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Hi, this is Jill Bates
and Colton Bates
with the Bates team at Best Real Estate.
Real estate can often feel very noisy and fast moving, but it doesn't have to be that way.
That's right, Colton. In fact, most real estate transactions often take months, but it can feel rushed when you're finally ready to take action but don't have a plan.
Our team at Best says go ahead and move slow, but starting now gives you the advantage you need.
Whether buying or selling, having a devoted team of experts on your side puts you in control when it's officially go time.
The best thing you can do right now is start the conversation, so give us a call at 675-BEST and visit bestwi.net.
Looking for a gift that means more this Valentine's Day? At Legacy Diamond and Gems, beautiful jewelry comes with a little something extra. For every $500 you spend, you'll receive a free $50 gift card, perfect for flowers, chocolates, or dinner. From classic diamonds to colorful gemstones in every style and budget, our bench jewelers help you find a piece that's truly personal. Make your gift and the whole night unforgettable. Legacy Diamond and Gems in downtown Sheridan or online at legacydiamondgems.com.
If you're in the market for a bull, get to the Powder River Angus Bull Sale February 13th at Buffalo Livestock Marketing. Offering 125 yearling Angus PAP-tested bulls. Offering sons of PRA Bulldogger, Miller's Duke, Coleman Rock, and Black Mass. Lunch starts at 11 a.m. The sale starts at 1 p.m. Don't miss the Powder River Angus Bull Sale February 13th at Buffalo Livestock Marketing. Bulls born and raised where corn don't grow.
Big dealerships have big budgets for big advertising, but the truth is that major sponsorships cost big bucks. Here at Prime Rate Motors, we choose to sponsor our local youth and local worthwhile programs, all the while passing that savings on to you, our customer. We are locally owned with the same ownership and management for over 40 years. If we don't have what you need, we'll find it and we'll stand behind it after the sale because we live here, we work here, and we raise our families here. Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeen Avenue.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Sheridan City Council member Andrew Patzig and Utilities Director Dan Roberts. Now, shifting the conversation from the SAWS Level 2 water study over to parking regulations. Now, Councilman, what is the purpose of the 8-hour street parking limit?
Well, listen, I know this was on our plan today, and I did do some research into this to try to find out some of these answers before I got here. Most of this is for informational purposes, but when you get down to it here, we have a beautiful city, and we've established some rules to kind of help us try to keep it that way. And this sometimes can create points of friction. But if you if you look at the 48-hour limit, it's specifically not talking about operable vehicles belonging to the residents. It's talking about inoperable vehicles or trailers, and basically it's trying to maintain road access. Like if a plow has got to come up your street, it's, and there's a trailer there, it's not going to be able to get in front of, it's going to have to swerve around the trailer. And that's a big part of the reason.
And this became mainly an issue after we began our what do they call that? Like our rotating plow schedule, or was this kind of an issue beforehand?
I think this has always been an issue because it's not just the plow that we have to give consideration to here. There's emergency vehicles, and there are some streets that maybe are a little bit older and they're not to the current width. And if you have vehicles parked on both sides of the street, it can narrow up the center to where people have to be really careful when they're passing each other. So it can cause some access problems. And then, you know, the other thing that we were looking at is, and this is, again, more for informational purposes, no parking on lawns and right-of-ways. Parking on driving on lawns and parks and playgrounds, boulevards, other non-roadway areas, it's prohibited without permission, and that the boulevards are rights of way of the city property and not intended for parking. So the other thing I wanted to say was, you know, unlicensed vehicles and abandoned or junk vehicles, these vehicles are considered a public nuisance and public on public private property and may be abated or impounded with specific timelines defined under Wyoming law. So I'm reading this off the paper here. This is for informational purposes. We just want to make sure everybody knows, you know, we're trying to do our best to keep our town looking good and you know, keep the streets looking good as well.
So. And operable.
Operable, that's right. Accessible.
Well, I think one of the main things is it's a, you know, it's established in city ordinance. And so why the 48 hours? I think when the ordinance was established, that was just a reasonable amount of time that didn't give the perception that people were using streets as their own personal driveway or garage, if you will, because they are public spaces. And I think it was just that the council, when it was passed and adopted at the time, is to make sure that we're at least still maintaining our streets and rights of way as public spaces for all.
And you know, it makes me wonder when it comes to, say, interstates. How long can we leave in a vehicle that's broke down on an interstate? Is it 48 hours? I don't know about that. I'd have to do some research, but maybe that's where they pulled it from, where they thought, you know what, this is a reasonable amount of time, 2 days to get out there, get the vehicle, and get it back. Now, let's go ahead and turn on over to the landfill. Actually, before I do that, Councilman, if someone did have a question pertaining to this parking ordinance, could they just call the SPD?
Call down to City Hall, call the police department. Regardless of where you call, they're going to be able to funnel you through to the right person to talk to. And actually, the other thing I was going to mention, if a person really wants to get into the nitty-gritty with it, it's actually city code. You can go right onto the city website under the city clerk's page. You can access the city code. And if you go to Article 16-4, they can read the actual language themselves and maybe even start learning some different, some other things about what the city code says. And they might find a new, but albeit strange, passion.
I'll tell you what. I had to do research on a Buffalo city code once, and I think I fell down that rabbit hole for at least 2 hours.
Yep. It can happen.
Learned a lot of things. Learned a lot of stuff, especially about like pets and how you handle those that I didn't know. So, yeah, you could fall down a rabbit hole there.
One of the last points on the vehicles that I noticed was, and this one kind of hit home for me, is no more than 7 motor vehicles may be parked or stored on a single family residence property over for over 72 hours. And now, look, I'm not a code expert. I'm working on becoming more knowledgeable about these things. I know that there are people in the city that can explain more about the reasoning and behind this. But the reason this one started hitting home for me is I have several kids that are starting to get to driving age. Yeah. And I'm just noticing we've got a lot of cars here. So I realized that there's going to be some people that are just, you got a lot of kids that are driving, there's going to be a lot of cars out front.
Yeah, and some families start to look like there's a reunion when it's just the immediate family.
Yep.
All right.
Turning over to the landfill changes. I love talking about the landfill. I never thought I would. I never thought talking about refuse would be so fascinating. But once you kind of get into that, it is fascinating. It's something that is so vital for a community. Now, can you remind us of the new landfill coupon punch card system? This is something that I talked to the city about previously. But let's remind everybody what's going on.
So we've developed a new process, and we're calling it a punch card system because that's truly what it is. It's just a punch card that's delivered to all residences. And that's an important distinction. Instead of a utility account holders, they're being delivered to all residences in Sheridan. Not Sheridan County, just the city of Sheridan. And because they benefit from this program because they're utility payers, water, sewer, and solid waste for the city of Sheridan. So they get six free disposals annually. So that's what we're offering. And the system of how we allow people to use that program has changed over the years. Originally, when I came here 15 years ago, they were mailed pieces of paper. They could tear away one of them, I think, and submit it and use it. We tried to get more modern with it, somewhere in between, by having a database of everybody that's an account holder, and then we could just look them up on the computer and verify they're who they say they are, which would require a identification. And then also we set a utility bill. So people were having to have those two pieces that were associated, and our scale house attendants were having to look them up on a computer. But you can imagine over the years, we discovered that creates a lot of conflicts with people.
Renters primarily.
Renters, they didn't really benefit from it let's say if they didn't pay the utility bills, then their landlord had all of them. And then they would have to sign them up on a list that would allow them to use their punches under the account of the landlord. A lot of complications, so many, and then keeping the database updated, was a difficult process. But you can imagine a grandson is bringing his grandmother's waste to the landfill, hope they're clean up or something. And I have a utility bill, but I'm not her.
I'm not Dolores.
Yeah. Yes. and that's just probably a simple example, but there's so many ways where people were challenging the process, and it created a tremendous amount of conflict, not just for our citizens, but also for our scale house attendants. And it was like, wait, man, we're just making this process so difficult, and let's remove the conflict the best we can. And so we went back to, let's just do a very simple process. And so lo and behold, we came up with the punch card system, and also directed them towards residences, because residences either directly or indirectly are paying for utilities. And so that was one thing that was probably a big change. And then it's like, and then you're just getting a punch card. It's a tearaway card like any other credit card or health, your credit card size, where you can just, it's kind of laminated. Yeah, it's hard plastic. Surface, plastic, yeah. But you can tear it out, put it in your wallet or whatever, and bring it to the landfill, and no questions asked. If you have it, we're punching it. And yeah. And so that process so far, people are already using it, is going swimmingly well.
Yeah, I've already used it.
In all cases. And so, yeah. So far, so good.
So everybody's got their cards.
Everybody got mail cards.
Okay.
So
hopefully they got it.
Hopefully they've got it.
Are some, the process isn't going to be perfect, so we'll learn how to improve it next time. So there are some that are getting not delivered because the address, the person that is listed at the address is not the right name.
Mm.
I'm not sure how that could happen, but it certainly could happen. So maybe if somebody didn't get one for whatever reason, just give us a call.
Yeah,
we're getting those back, and so we can look through and say, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
We have yours. You can come get it.
I think I got mail for the guy who used to live where I live for at least 3 years.
Wow.
At least three more years. And I kept having to take it back and say, the gentleman no longer lives here. And it's every once in a while, we still get a letter for him. So I understand that.
And then P.O. boxes is another one. So if you have if you get your mail in a P.O. box, they may not deliver to a physical address. Mm-hmm. So please call. We'll verify. We have your card here. It's your name and address, and we'll give it to you. And so how we skin that cat in the future, we're going to work through that when it comes to P.O. boxes. But every address did receive one via mail. Can't guarantee one got in everybody's hands because we have been getting some of them back.
Mm.
So I want to say Selena reported that we had about 1,000 of them in that category.
Oh, a significant number.
So
wow.
We're still,
there's about, 7,000 addresses in the city limits?
No, it's closer to 10.
10,000? Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more than a utility account holders, but yeah, it was quite a few.
Now, when it comes to maintaining my card, it gets it punched. I make sure it goes right back in my wallet. That's kind of how I do things. Or maybe even into the, you know, the glove box. We throw it in
there. I was going to say
so
that.
It stays there. and we know it's there when we need it.
Yeah.
What happens if I lose it?
Then you have to wait till next year to get another one, or acquire one through another means.
Okay. All right. So
if you got a buddy who's not going to use all of his, you can say, hey, can I have one of your punches? And that's the beauty of this system is the punch card system removes the guesswork. It removes the need to constantly update databases, and it makes landfill trips easy to track for all of us. And I'm glad you brought up the glove box, because my advice to people was going to be just put the punch card in the glove box of the car you're most likely to take to the dump.
Yep. In the little Datsun pickup that you're using for your dump runs. Mm-hmm. On that, I'm getting the signal to take another quick commercial break. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
I'm here with Candace Kindred from Teriyaki Madness. Long days are cold and dinner decisions feel harder than they should.
Tommy, hi. So warm things up with Teriyaki Madness. Come check out our best-selling orange chicken tossed hot in the wok and served over warm noodles. And if you want more heat, make it spicy. It's real made-to-order comfort food that warms you from the inside out.
And you don't even have to go out in the cold.
Now with Mad Dash, order on the Teriyaki Madness app, select Mad Dash, and pull up front. We'll run the food right out to your car. Stay warm and keep those kids buckled.
Turn up the heat with Teriyaki Madness.
Hi, it's Dan with Captain Clean, and furnaces are working overtime. Replacing your furnace filter routinely is essential to keeping your air clean and furnace operating effectively. In addition, it's recommended you have your furnace and ductwork professionally cleaned every 5 to 10 years. Call Captain Clean today at 672-0726 for a free HVAC cleaning estimate, and have our certified and experienced staff take a look at your system. Call Captain Clean today. Affordable choices for healthy living.
Branded with quality, Shipton's Big R.
Valentine's Day is here soon. What a great time to shop Montana Silversmiths for your sweetheart. Your largest and most complete selection is found at Shipton's Big R. Jewelry, buckles, collections, and accessories. Now is the time to love a cowboy and cowgirl. Sophisticated styles, Western soul for him, for her. Earrings, buckles, necklaces, bracelets, jewelry sets, money clips, and more. Our entire Montana Silversmith selection is now on sale at 15% off. Rooted in the West with handcrafted detail. New styles and designs have arrived for Valentine's Day. Montana Silversmiths, now on sale at Shipton's Big R on Sugarland Drive in Sheridan.
Family-friendly company, branded with quality. Shipton's Big R.
Moss Holder's President's Day sale is going on now. Every single purchase is being discounted, but by getting two or three items, you will save even larger percentages. Moss Holder's has a huge in-stock selection with more than 70 recliners, 30 sofas, and tons of mattresses. If you choose to customize, all orders are being discounted as well. Save on rugs, accessories, all bedroom and dining furniture, even sheets and pillows get special pricing this weekend. That's Moss Holder's President's Day sale, going on now. Moss Holder's, furniture is our passion.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. We are sitting with Sheridan City Council member Andrew Pansy and Utilities Director Dan Roberts. Okay, we've got President's Day coming up just around the corner. Councilman, what city facilities will be closed February 16th?
Pretty much all of them. We're going to observe President's Day, as usually happens on holiday weeks. That means that our trash and recycling pickup schedule gets compressed. So Tuesday is going to be a double pickup day. Just letting people know, this is kind of like a public announcement. If you can, just to help things get moving smoothly, if you can get your cans out by 6 a.m., we just wanted to let people know that's going to help turn Tuesday, a double day, into a little bit easier operation for the city to handle. Yeah. So, but yeah, city's going to be closed down on President's Day.
All right. So folks, if you're usually a Monday pickup, make sure that you get them out there early Tuesday morning.
Right on.
Okay. All right. Now, let's move on down to Gillespie Draw. Now, when it comes to the West Corridor Gillespie Draw Analysis and Feasibility Study, that is a mouthful, Councilman. What is it?
Well, so here's where I would begin. There is a broader city initiative to try to increase connectivity through our roadway network. The city has been looking for a way to connect the west side of town with sort of like, in Casper, they have Outer Drive. And it helps people get from one end of town to the other in a quicker manner because there are fewer cross streets and fewer, and you can have a little bit higher speed and so on and so forth.
Cheyenne has something like that too.
Yeah. I think it's part of good city planning to try to figure out a way not to have to funnel your entire population through bottlenecks in town. Give them more than one option. So the Gillespie Draw Study is, the city recognized, and it was pointed out by local residents, that that might be a particular area of interest because there were some questions about feasibility. If you look at the Sparrowhawk and Osprey Hills and possibly even the Saddlecrest roadways, over time they tend to degrade. Now, one of the things that's going to be looked at is what is causing this, and it could be a high groundwater level. And saturated soils can lubricate soil, which allows it to move. And when soil moves, it doesn't do good things for either rigid or flexible pavements, which asphalt is a flexible, concrete is a rigid. So one of the things that they're going to be looking at is through this area that seems to have some trouble with keeping good, you know, durability of roads, what can be done about this? And they've got a really great team of engineers that are just excited to gather all the data and all the issues and start tackling it. You know, That's what engineers love to do. Give
solve
them problems. Yeah, solve the problems. That's it. So, but I wanted to, I'll stop there for now.
Okay. Now, when was the contract officially signed? And this is with, I hope I'm saying this right, Morrison
Merrily.
Merrily?
Yep, Morrison Merrily.
Morrison Merrily.
Yep. Gosh, you know, I don't remember exactly. It wasn't that long ago. What?
In early January, yeah, they signed the contract. Council approved it in November, but I think they signed a contract in early January. And then we just recently conducted our first stakeholder meeting or public meeting with the surrounding residents, I believe, just a couple of days ago on Tuesday.
Was there anything that came out of that that's kind of at the top of your mind right now? Concerns or maybe comments?
Councilman Patsik was attendance at that meeting, so he might share a little bit about what he heard from the
I would be so public. Happy to. The surrounding residents, I'll tell you, what they came prepared with was super impressive. I mean, they had done their homework, and they said, look, these are our concerns. And a lot of the low-hanging fruit was everybody knew, like wildlife crossing, steepness of roads, of the road, geotechnical stability of the soil. Those are the easy ones to think about. But one of the things that came out of the stakeholder meeting that wasn't thought about was, well, how's this going to affect a bus stop? We have buses that come in and drop kids off and pick them up. And so that was one of the things I remember being written down. And there was also the emphasis on the potential of a higher groundwater level being the reason that roads tend to have a hard time staying in good shape in that area. So those were two things that came out of the stakeholder meeting.
And these engineers now, they're going to go in, they're going to take a look at this soil, and they're going to try and figure out, hey, is this even something that we can afford long term? Or are we just building a road to watch it degrade, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you what, they've got an awesome team. Morrison Merrily teamed up with Jacobs, who's working with Terracon. I mean, we're talking about some of the premier experts nationwide. Actually, Jacobs, I think, is the largest engineering company in the world. So they've got access to the resources and the knowledge base to really take a good look at this. And when it comes down to it, it's not so much a matter of can we do it? Because an engineer could, I mean, I know this is a ridiculous statement, but an engineer could build a bridge to the moon. Obviously, the moon is spinning, so that's not true. but the fact of the matter is what is it going to take to get it done, and is it worth the cost? So that's really, I think, where the feasibility is going to come through. So how much road, what's the thickness of road base? Are they going to have to set it on drilled piers? Is the ground sufficient to hold stability in itself without those extra amenities? Or amendments, sorry, that's what they're going to be looking into.
Has there been discussion at all on any level, to your knowledge, that if it doesn't work, if the engineers come back and they tell you basically, hey, we're going to build it just to watch it disappear year after year after year, has there been discussions about another location, about another route?
Yeah, they've been looking at other routes for some time. In fact, the initial back of the envelope analysis went further west and then even further west to find out, well, is there a better option, maybe a little bit shallower grade where you don't have to carve as much into the road, because earthwork is actually very expensive. But when it came down to it, when the city's trying to be a good steward of the people's tax dollars, they have to look at, well, these other options, do they represent a higher cost, comparable cost, or lower cost? And in every case, it was a higher cost. There's going to be a longer distance of road. And so purely from an economical standpoint, the current planned pathway was the first one that they were looking at. But if they come up with a, no, this isn't going to work, then obviously the city's going to be like, all right, if this is the case, then we need to find a way that's going to work, because we still need that connectivity somewhere on the West End.
Yeah. And is this something that like a lot of folks talk about, you know, either to city council, or is this just something part of like a big master plan that's already filed away and has been for a number of years?
The connectivity on the West End of town has been talked about for a long time. It's specific location where it's being planned and examined today was more recent, but it is generally a a good planning exercise for a city to be looking at. Okay, we've got more and more people, especially when you get masses of residential areas. How do we funnel people from those residential areas to the north end of town, south end of town, past downtown? And right now we've got really one main option if you got to go from the south side to the north side. And that's either you're going to be hitting Main Street or you're going to be hitting the interstate. And so it's just good planning for a city to be looking at how they can increase connectivity.
Well, it's just like with the water that we were talking about beforehand. Now's the time. Now's the time, yep, before we start looking at a larger problem and wondering how the heck to solve it. Yeah. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for coming in this morning. It's always a pleasure having you guys on
thank
here.
Thank you so much.
We talked about some pretty big issues today, so I appreciate you coming in and keeping us all up to date on it.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
What makes First Federal Bank and Trust different?
No shareholders, just shared values and profits that are reinvested locally, supporting nonprofits to help our community thrive.
Mutual means more for our communities.
With years of trusted local service and modern banking tools that make life easier, mutual means more.
First Federal Bank and Trust, banking with shared values. Member FDIC.
When it comes to Wyoming, your roof takes the hits. Hail, wind, snow, and sun. That's why Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors installs metal roofing built to last. From commercial-grade R-panel, residential metal roofs, and our impact-resistant 24-gauge standing seam systems, every option is engineered for strength, longevity, and performance. When you want protection that lasts a lifetime, call Brandon 307 for your free inspection. Quality materials, quality installation, local experience you can count on. Visit Brandon307.com. Brandon 307, Branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
The world's premier touring guitar festival returns to the Wild Theater stage tonight with an unforgettable evening of artistry, diversity, and virtuosity. This year's international guitar lineup features four extraordinary talents: Australian classical guitarist Stephanie Jones, Brazilian crossover sensation Lucas Imbiriba, Russian fingerstyle innovator Alexander Misko, and Hawaiian ukulele virtuoso Taimane. International Guitar Night, tonight at 7 p.m. Get your tickets now at the Wild box office or online at wildtheater.com.
To really enjoy Wyoming's outdoors, it helps to have skills. If you, your family, or 12 to 15-year-old wants to learn hunting, fishing, and outdoor skills, consider one of the camps offered by the Wyoming Game & Fish this summer. Applications for 2026 camps are on the Game & Fish website beginning January 1st. Learn the basics of hunting, fishing, and the outdoors in the midst of spectacular scenery. There's youth camps, camps for women, and camps for families. The Game & Fish website has details. Sponsored by the Wyoming Game & Fish, the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
The Sweet Deals Marketplace is online at SheridanMedia.com. Bid now on items from Black Diamond Detailing, Kilpatrick Creations, Beano's Corner, Chem Dry Carpet Cleaning, The Fiber House, Miracle Housekeeping, Sheridan Seed, Story Store, Glow Wild Spray Tan and Skin Care, and Tales of the City, along with Designing Dinners, Sagewood North Cafe, Craft Bros Music, EBA Hearing, Dalton's RV, and a lot more. Shop the Sweet Deals Online Marketplace now through February 16th at SheridanMedia.com.